Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me today. Always a pleasure to have you with me, and you know, we've been through some interesting times together, haven't we, over the last 7 years, interviewed, 1,500 advisors, authors, and others, and today I have a very interesting lineup for you. I hope you're going to find this very interesting. My first guest is going to be Lance Growlick. Sorry, Lance. Lance is CEO of Ion Franchising, and he really has an interesting story about how he started fresh after ditching life as a suit on Wall Street to hosting at the first TGI Fridays and then learned about sensible franchising and made his way up the chain quickly as it grew and then basically has become a very big success in the franchising world, and he helps business owners to find the best franchises for them. And I'll let him tell the rest. Lance, thanks so much for joining me today. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thanks, Lance. It's a very interesting phenomenon, I think, for a lot of our listeners who are generally baby boomers. So, you know, over age 50, they've been around the block a few times. And when they started their business many years ago, they didn't have a major competitor in the marketplace in the form of a franchise. And nowadays, if you go to a franchise expo back in the good old days before COVID, they take up a whole expo center like the Anaheim Convention Center down the street from me here. There's tons and tons and tons of franchises in areas that you might not even have thought about. So I'm very interested to hear about what you do. But first of all, let's hear about that story about how you went from being a suit on Wall Street to basically working in one of these franchises and then getting into the franchise business. Tell us about you.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I had an amazing upbringing. I had very caring, loving parents and entrepreneurial grandfathers on both sides, and very, very successful. One of which barely spoke English and built a supermarket empire throughout Brooklyn and Queens starting in the 50s. And so I had some very good examples out there, but, you know, there's an old, you might have heard the nature versus nurture argument as to how do entrepreneurs really get started. And I think after witnessing the success of what it's like being your own boss, I was doomed to actually be an entrepreneur no matter what. I did attempt, Wall Street. It was basically my dad was a partner on Wall Street, and I liked finance. And I pursued that because, you know, it was easy and you could make a lot of money. But I was bored to tears, did it throughout the summers in high school, college, out of college. And then I had an opportunity, another family, sort of family member who made his money in tech before anybody else did, was in Arizona, and he called me and said, look, I just bought four TGI Fridays franchises. I heard you're bored. I did work in hospitality and restaurants throughout the college, and, he thought it would be a good fit. And I said, well, that's exciting. I'd love to go to Arizona. And I did. And 5 years later, it was a $225 million TGI Fridays franchise. We acquired quite a few locations, but I certainly would like to say I earned my MBA in restaurants and franchising in those 5 years, everything from site selection to training. And it was really an incredible opportunity. And that's the springboard to you know, my entrepreneurship sort of story. I never had a real job after that, and you know, became a franchisee of multiple brands. And I don't want to get ahead, but you know, that's the thing, Bill. In my business, I'm not just some kooky sales guy. I've been there, done that, and I am, you know, 54 myself. So I love to help people either find their perfect franchise, or believe it or not, another nice chunk of my business is folks that have independent businesses that have some sort of success, and what I call the secret sauce, setting them up to franchise so they can grow and scale. And boy, your show is a perfect title for what I coach people on, is all about their exit strategy.
Excellent. Yeah. And interesting that you would say that, because, you know, there are many ways to exit a business. And some business owners we talk to are just tired and they just want to get out, but others just are looking for that extra energy, maybe that next level of something, you know, to grow the business in. And we always tell people, Lance, that, you know, no matter what you do, you would be well served to look at what a franchise sale kit or operations kit looks like, and create that, even if you're a one location company, because that is your competition. When a lot of businesses are buyers are looking for purchases, they've seen the nice neat franchise package. And
absolutely.
And when they come in and you say, well, everything's in my head, you're in trouble. So let's talk about that.
No, it's, you know, it's all about the systems. And look, you brought up a very, very good point at the top of the show regarding franchising and, you know, where it is now versus where it was. And I could certainly tell you that in the last 12 years, when, you know, Google came about, I think it was probably about 12 years ago, the technology side has really accelerated the growth of franchise brands, because, you know, in the old days, how would people find a business in the first place? It would be the Yellow Pages, right? Before Google, before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
nowadays it's SEO, search engine optimization, and local SEO is dominated by franchises. They do an incredible job of, you know, look, franchising, we all know, started because it was you know, a mom and pop business doing whatever. Could be electrical, could be painting. And franchising came along and systemized it, set up a better mm-hmm. process, negotiated deals with vendors that were better than just a single unit operator that was a typical mom and pop, put appropriate training protocols in place. And again, technology has helped accelerate that. Now everybody has some sort of learning management system to train people remotely. And, you know, now that we've gone through and are still in a pandemic, people don't want to see each other, breathe on each other, even talk to each other. So that
right.
sort of training, that training needs to happen remotely as well as much as possible. But thankfully, the franchise world is doing fantastic and will continue to do so.
Now, I don't know if you have any statistics about the growth in the numbers of franchises over the last several years. But it's not shrinking. I know it's not shrinking because I've been to expos 10 years ago and a couple years ago, and it's compounding very nicely. The number of franchise opportunities out there are expanding mightily, right?
Yeah, the one thing that's for sure, I don't have any statistics handy today, but, you know, the IFA, the International Franchise Association, that, you know, obviously governs franchising, has great statistics on their site. You know, the fact of the matter, to your point, is that the franchise world grows every year, and absolutely 100%. And it's you know, it's a nice number on our gross domestic product, as you would expect. I've seen some statistics that, you know, 50% of all retail establishments are some sort of franchise, whether it's a hair salon, whether it's a restaurant, a massage concept, waxing, whatever it might be. And in fact, all those concepts that I just mentioned fall into the top two categories that tend to be the most popular in franchising, which is restaurants as well as personal care brands.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two most
mm-hmm.
popular. But the categories, Bill, go on and on today. I mean, we're talking everything from automotive to senior care services, kid-related franchises like tutoring and after school. I mean, the categories are just endless. I have quite a few IV infusion brands today, you know, in the medical or non-traditional medical sort of space.
So back to our audience, it could be a business owner who's owned their manufacturing business or small business for, let's say, 35 years, and, you know, they're tired of that. They want to maybe exit that business and get out of that industry, but they might be looking for something else. And that's, I would imagine, what the type, I'll bet you get a lot of calls from people who fit that profile. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what the conversation is typically like with someone in that, you know, who represents that kind of icon. And also tell us a little bit about what are some of the biggest surprises that they have when they talk to you about the world of franchising.
Well, let me start with the second part first. The biggest surprises typically always are that people don't understand and don't realize how many different franchise brands there are. I mean, there's 6,000 plus franchises last I checked, and there's no way for somebody to discover their perfect franchise through a Google search. As we know, you might get lucky and come up with a couple of lists of franchise brands, but there's really no way to do a deep dive on all those brands yourself. And that's why people decide to work with brokers or consultants like myself, because on the search side, you know, it's completely free. We make a success fee or commission from our brands, assuming, you know, we complete a sale. So the surprise really is how many great brands there are, and the fact that you do not have to be a millionaire to own a franchise. Now, the way the process works best is when people call me, and you're 100% right, Bill, I mean, half of my business is probably what I call the corporate refugee types, either folks that, you know, had a great position and decided they were going to retire from that between 50 and 60, or it's a group that I placed a gentleman last year that I'll never forget this story. He called me and he goes, I'm going to lose my job within 5 years. I could see it happening. Everything's going to China. And I'm going to lose my job in 5 years. I want to be ahead of that curve, and I want to find something. And he had something very specific in mind, connected him with that particular, you know, home-based deal. He bought him multiple territories, and, you know, probably a year and a half ago now. A year and a half later, he's still very happy. He refers people to me all the time. Fantastic. But, you know, then I have people that really have no idea what they want. And I'll tell you a story about a good friend of mine. He worked with a consultant before I actually knew this individual, otherwise I would have worked with him. And he told me the story. He says, you know, the consultant, you know, did it like I would, and he kind of broke it down. And I try to get into somebody's head understanding them. What are their interests? What are they like? What are they not like? Lifestyle, as you can imagine, Bill, especially for your listeners, mm-hmm. is crucial to everybody. You know, do you only want to work 9 to 5? Do you want weekends off? Do you care? Some people really care about that, and other people don't. Some people just really care about what I call is the profit path. They want to understand mm-hmm. something that's sort of relatively safe, certainly proven, but proven is different to different people. Some people think McDonald's is the only proven franchise out there, and I would argue that I could find plenty of franchises to make a lot more money for a lot less mm-hmm. CapEx. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, and I always explain to people, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, you know? I mean, look, when I was dating, I thought a blonde or a brunette would be preferential, but I ended up with a redhead. Well, that's actually not true. I ended up with a blonde. But the point is, the story always changes.
Matchmaker,
I hope you laugh. No, but, you know, and that's what I am, is a matchmaker. But it's really the most important elements of what people are looking for. So getting back to the story with my friend, my friend just told his consultant, look, I want to spend $200,000. I think I might want a retail type concept. I don't know what that is. I don't think I want to do a restaurant. It's pretty vague. But $200,000, I got about $50,000 I want to put in an investment, get a loan for the rest. SBA loans are easy to get, just need a 680 credit score. The SBA loves to lend to prospective franchisees to stimulate the economy because they know franchises are less of a risk than just an independent startup. Mm-hmm. Not to mention mm-hmm. that the SBA, as you certainly know, guarantees, well, it was 50%. Now it's closer to 90% of the loan. So the bank has mm-hmm. no real risk. So everybody loves to lend that money. So my friend ended up, the consultant basically told him, you should do a franchise hair salon. And my friend fell out of his chair laughing and thought it was the dumbest idea he had ever heard. But at the end of the day, it fit. It checked every single box. And the reason it did, well, the reason it did, it had a great ROI. You'll get your money back generally in 3 years. It fit his investment level. It fit his lifestyle. He doesn't even know how to cut hair. He's bald. He never even needs a haircut. So he's not even a customer. But once you get over those things, for some people it's impossible because they have this, you know, fantasy of what they want. And that's okay. I can get people that fantasy in some instances, and in other instances, you know, and maybe it doesn't exist. But here's the good news. So 13 years later, my friend has 20 franchised hair salons and you know, nets $1.5 million a year. And he's thrilled. Now it's already a generational, multi-generational thing. His family's basically running it now. So there are success stories like that all over the place. And look, in every franchise model or system, there's that bottom 10% of people that don't work out. They probably shouldn't even be in a franchise system or probably shouldn't even be their own boss. But same reason I made a mistake in my first marriage. We all make mistakes.
Well, I was going to ask you that because, yeah, there's a large number of failures in small businesses like, you know, startups and restaurants and things like that. But when you start with a franchise, now you pay a little more, but you get a proven – well, tell our listeners, what do you get typically when you buy a franchise? Let's say that's maybe not so, you know, you want to get on the ground floor, maybe not so established in your area, but you're still going to get some of the basic things that you'd expect from any franchise. Tell us what's in the box.
Yeah, what's in the box? The old business in a box, right, Bill? You know, obviously there's a system, some sort of system, operations manual, et cetera. You're going to have support. You're going to have training, mentorship. They're going to be doing R&D on a regular basis. I have an older brand that only had 3 revenue streams, and now they have 10. They continue to evolve. Technology. They all have technology as a major part of it. I have a moving company that's a franchise moving company that's very popular, and they'll tell you that basically 80% of your customers are because of their search engine optimization via the website or through their call center. Pretty incredible. Overall brand awareness that naturally brings customers to you. I was a Wingstop franchisee. I opened my first store. It didn't do very well in the beginning because it was an unknown entity. I got in there, you know, when there was only a couple hundred stores. But by the time I opened store number 4, I did incredibly well, like $35,000 a week and set a Wingstop record.
Wow.
The fact that it's proven and always on my list is ease of exit. There's a secondary market for franchises. So when you want to go sell a franchise, you can typically get 3 to 5 times cash flow as a franchisee. I sold my Wingstops, to be exact, for 4.2 times cash flow, which was way above my investment. So, you know, what a lot of people seem to forget in franchising or even in business ownership that have never done it before, you know, sure, you have write-offs if you're an asset-heavy, you know, brand like or category like restaurants. But then you have the ability to make an income, and then you also have the equity, just like a home, when you sell, when you have done a great job. But you know, look, I've been with plenty of people that are not really great franchisees, and maybe they'd be better suited for another business. A lot of people love to get in the restaurant business because they think it's cool and sexy. But the reality is, there's a lot of people I know that don't like to work that hard. And, you know, when you're launching a restaurant franchise, the more time you devote, I think the better, you know, you take off and really build a solid foundation. So hopefully that helps. Now, on the sale when you own a franchise brand, in the last couple of years, you can sell for 10 times cash flow as a franchisor. Those numbers add up very, very quickly. In fact, I have a call with someone right after you that has a great business and very specialty niche in the landscape world. And I think she can do amazingly well as a franchisor. And she is tired of adding more and more employees and having them work directly for her, which is why a lot of successful business owners love scaling through franchising. You're not the one up at night worrying about your employees. You let somebody else use your brand and you're what you've created.
Yeah. If you're going to all that work to create all those processes and systems and the, you know, like you said, the training, the technology, the brand awareness, yeah, why not try to leverage that in other ways through building your own franchise? It's another thing to talk about for business owners who are thinking about, you know, that not the first 5 years of business, but maybe their last 5 to 10 years and what they're going to do to build the value and sustainability of that business. Lance, really great, great tips and a very fascinating interview. I think I've learned a lot, taken a lot of notes, and I hope our listeners have too. But tell us how our listeners would start a conversation with you to learn more about what their opportunities might be. What's the best way for them to find out more about you and to get in touch?
Yeah. I have a free assessment on my website at ionfranchising.com, I-O-N, franchising.com. Free assessment will help me determine, you know, brands you're most compatible with based on your comfort zone and skills and you know, past experiences. So that, in addition to my detailed sort of questionnaire, I can start a search with all that information. It all starts with the first call. But Bill, one final parting comment I want to make sure everybody understands as well. The best part of the franchise process is when you go through all the things with me and you're introduced to brands is the validation, the fact that you get to talk to existing franchisees about their experiences so you can understand whether you're going to fit within that culture. So take that first step, reach out to me. I'm happy to talk with you.
Well, you're a tremendous resource of knowledge and information for our listeners, and I really appreciate you taking the time to spend some time with us, and I hope that next call goes real well for you. Thanks so much, Lance. Real pleasure.
Thanks, Bill. Talk to you.
All right. Thank you. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
When your business value is wrapped up in your client list, what's the most important thing you can do to drive the value of your business? We asked expert Stacy McKibben.
If you don't have really strong, you know, client relation management tools, CRMs, as they're lovingly referred to, if you don't have tools like that in your business, it's going to be very difficult to transition it over. As a matter of fact, your next buyer is going to use that as a reason to drive down your sale price. Absolutely, one of the biggest areas of opportunity that we see in professional services businesses are going back to your existing and previous clients. Oftentimes, we just forget that they don't necessarily know the full breadth of services that we provide and how they can use us or even refer us to their friends and family. So that is a big win in most businesses, is just starting there. And it's very difficult to do if you don't have a good system in place with which to do it.
One of the most common ways a business is sold is through something called an earnout. And we asked for information and an example from business broker Chris Bond.
What buyers want to have happen is they want a seller to prove the actual value of the business by having them be patient and waiting for a piece of the payout. So in other words, once the transition period has happened, say 6, 12, 18, or 24 months, the buyer will make additional payments with the comfort that, okay, it is what you said it is. Had a very creative deal earlier this year where down payment was made for about 80% of the deal. A bank stepped in for a percentage of the deal. The seller actually financed another small percentage of the deal. And the earnout comes in years 3, 4, and 5. So everybody's pulling in the same direction, making sure the first 2 years go very smoothly.
What are some of the challenges for leaders in this knowledge-based economy? Here's CEO Coach Bill Anton.
The person that has the most influence over the entire organization is the person that leads the organization. And transforming that person exponentially influences change. My training as a psychologist, my understanding about the kinds of organizations that are going to be successful in the future are going to be organizations that realize that knowledge is their product and that knowledge can only be created by enrollment, not by compliance. And so the task of the leader of the future is to transform the people that work in the organization so that they want to give their best and so that they're willing to offer ideas and perspectives that create knowledge and innovation for the organization.
Medical insurance is a big part of your budget. How do you contain those costs? We ask benefits expert Rep Bray.
We'll talk about wellness is how we can start to communicate the importance of the wellness and that we give the people and the employees the opportunities to do things that will help them to become healthier. We start to educate them on the importance of annual physicals. We start to educate them on preventative care. Women do this quite well. Men have a tendency to wait till body parts don't work and then they go, which can be late. And it's interesting, we take better care of our car. We change the oil. We see the lamp light comes on, and for a lot of us, we don't do the maintenance that we should do on a regular basis. That will identify a lot of issues that people have that now you can start to address either through medication, through exercise or diet. There are just a few key areas that you can identify that will drive these higher costs.
Okay, so we've heard the term before, treat your business like an investment. It'll be a lot easier to sell down the road. What exactly does that mean? We asked an expert, Don Berzin.
Many of us in the field encourage owners to look at their business as an investment. Some owners understand that concept, but many do not. I mean, for a number of them, they see their business as either a job, a cash machine, a passion, or an extension of who they are. And the term investment sounds a little too removed for them to relate to. And we also let it be known that a business is actually easier to sell when it has a passive ownership. I mean, an owner who is not personally critical to maintaining future cash flows. But let's face it, I mean, one of the last terms that ever come to mind when we think about most entrepreneurs is passive. You know, these people are doers, they make things happen, and sitting on the sidelines is not something that many of them want to do at any stage of their career.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Why would you have a revocable living trust instead of a will? Here's attorney Matt Amaro.
One of the main reasons that you would consider doing a revocable trust versus just having a will is avoiding what we would call a probate process, which is a court proceeding to distribute a family estate, which can be very expensive and legal fees, court fees, and just involves a lot of court involvement that can be pretty painful. So by using a trust, you can get out of that. Now, if your assets aren't high enough, that's one way you may be able to avoid probate without a trust. And the other way is you may have assets that are able to pass to beneficiaries outside of a trust and outside of probate, even if you don't have a trust. But when you have real property, you usually won't be able to avail yourself of those two exceptions to staying out of probate.
How do most people decide it's time to start exit planning, and what's on their mind when they do? Here's Jim Immel.
Long term is really interesting. I use the analogy of the light switch. Sometimes these business owners don't think about it, and then all of a sudden they wake up one day and they just want to turn the light switch off, and they go from being passionate 100% into the game, and then all of a sudden something starts feeling heavy. Maybe it's a personal situation that's happened, but they literally turn the light switch off. Most of the people that you and I work with, it's more like a dimmer switch. They just don't do it that quick. They do it over time. But what really a lot of them are thinking about is, how do I transition myself out of the leadership position, provide other people opportunity to get into that leadership position so the business is being prepared to transition from a position of strength and not weakness.
People are nervous about stocks and bonds these days. What's the outlook for income real estate? We asked real estate expert Scott Tamkin.
I'm a firm believer that income property will grow wealth over time. And there are parts of Los Angeles where income property is still affordable. The west side of LA doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but there are parts of LA where there are still opportunities. And I firmly believe that, particularly in some of the outlying areas, the gentrification will continue and people will want to rent in those areas, particularly as public transportation expands. People have some extra money. They're looking to invest in income property. I would say good strategy might be to join up with others who are doing the same. There are some crowdfunding sites that offer some opportunities to do that, but I would be careful just jumping in and talk to an expert in the multifamily business. I think over time it will prove to be lucrative.
Protecting your assets is important, but when you do it is even more important. Here's attorney Harry Barth.
A very important component to understand is that, as with all business deals, asset protection being just one of them, is to be able to settle a proposed claim within reasonable limits. It's very, very difficult to do that if you're in jeopardy of losing your home, losing your business, and losing your life savings. So I think that it's important that asset protection is granular. We look at the various components. We take into consideration all of the goals and objectives of our particular clients. And there's not one size fits all. Every situation is different. Every background is different. Every family makeup is different. Every business transaction is different.
What's the best way to use Twitter and other social media? We asked expert Tim Templeton.
I just had a friend ask me today, I don't really get Twitter. What is the value? And I said, you know, it's two things. It's self-promotion, or business promotion in this case, and it's research. So if you want people to know who you are and what you're doing, and you create content, you create blog content, you want people to see it, one of the best ways to get it out in front of people is to send out an announcement using Twitter. Likewise, if you're trying to find people in your ecosystem, your business, the analysts, the resellers, the potential partners, you can find them by their activity on Twitter. You can interact with them, you can follow them, you can retweet things that they're sending, and you can create a relationship that way, which is a lot easier than it used to be.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
Of all the things that can happen on the way to the sale of your business, having a deal fall apart because of sloppy financials is probably the worst. Here's expert Addison Adams.
In the sale of a company, you are in a very cooperative process with the other side. If you're the seller of the business and the buyer is coming in and evaluating whether to buy your business, there needs to be a high level of trust there. A trust that you are not only being open and honest about your business and what you know about it, but also credibility that you know what you're talking about. And that when you hand over your financial statements, for example, they're clean, they're correct, they're complete, and they're not misleading. Preferably they're audited, and not only currently audited, but going back several years. And this is so that there is a confidence that comes in from the point of view of the buyer.
You're the trustee of your company's 401k or profit sharing plan. You have certain responsibilities. What can happen when things go wrong? We ask Buck Blanton.
We have a responsibility when we run qualified plans as a business owner, or in that world we call it a plan sponsor. That person has a responsibility of due care and due loyalty to the participant. And sometimes we forget that when we run plans and we do other things. But as you said, those breaches can become kind of onerous. The 2013 audit year, there were 3,566 audits performed by the Department of Labor, and more than $2.7 billion with a B dollars in fines and penalties were levied. All of those things can be done and levied against corporate officers personally. It's not your corporate seat that might get sued or levied. It's going to be you personally.
What are some of the biggest challenges facing family businesses in their management transition? We asked Transition Consulting Group's David and Paul Karofsky for their thoughts regarding this topic.
As the baby boomers are coming of age and getting a little bit older, as the next generation is starting to get a little bit older and come into that leadership position, this transfer of not only monetary wealth, but you're talking about the businesses, the assets, whatever it might be, there needs to be a plan to transfer that seamlessly. To my dad's point, the more planning you do and you talk about it as to what that transition of ownership looks like, what is that transition of leadership? Those two are not the same. They can be similar in tie, but they can be mutually exclusive as well. But until you really have a plan as to how you transfer that business from one generation to the next, it's very difficult to do it.
When a parent passes away, sometimes dealing with mom or dad's effects can be challenging. Here's senior real estate expert Allison Whitaker.
There's different levels of sorting through things. And so we work with organizers and professional inventory people, estate sale planners. Basically, they come in and they will help you sort. Is this a donation pile? Is this a for sale pile? Are these items things that we need to send off to our auction house in London to get appraised and actually auction off? There's different auction houses as well, not just Sotheby's. If it's sports memorabilia, you know, that we would recommend using. There's also that element of, is it a good time to sell the house when it comes to taxes? Taxes are a whole nother conversation, and a lot of times people think, well, the market's up, we should just sell the house, but there could be some tax ramifications depending upon the way the estate has been set up, that maybe it's better to rent it out for a couple years.
How would an attorney specializing in professionals handle a case differently? We asked Miranda McCroskey.
A young man came to me with an allegation of a hit and run, and he was looking at jail time. Going to jail was going to be a big problem for a lot of reasons. So I provided the district attorney with all the mitigating factors, all the factors that they could consider in determining his sentence. And I stressed to the DA the consequences of the criminal conviction on this young man. And the benefit is he was able to do a diversion program, which means avoiding the conviction entirely. The less obvious benefit was that he avoided the criminal conviction that would have affected his path because he wanted to be a physical therapist. From the application process to the physical therapy board through the renewals that each board has, he would have had to bring that conviction up year after year and discuss that. And so he got to avoid all of that.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
With all the social media platforms to choose from, why has YouTube become so popular? We asked Joan Pounds.
The younger generations do a lot more visually, so a lot of times your YouTube videos and things like that are better ways to reach out to them. I found out through my son, actually, who's a teenager, that YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. And I never even thought about going to YouTube to find out how to do something. And the beauty about YouTube is we can create our own videos right now from our phones and upload them to YouTube. And the neat thing about that is you're creating your own celebrity during that time. People buy from those they know, like, and trust. And that's one way for people to reach out, begin to know you and to like you and to trust you.
Family businesses can be very challenging sometimes. Here's Roseanne Levy from the Roark Group.
What I tell people is think about your family and think about working with them. We addressed many issues of families who work together and really helped them resolve them. What are they dealing with? What are their major issues? And, you know, just from there, we, you know, work with the family, work with all members of the family. Of course, all the family members have to be in agreement to say, okay, we want to make this better. We want it to work, because God knows in many cases they're not interested in cooperating and they each go their own way, and then the business tends to not thrive. So we're very much on top of what families go through. And I did have one member, I love to share this, who said, gosh, if we could only learn to run our businesses with our heads and not our hearts, we'd be a lot more successful. So that's always stayed with me, and it's really the truth.
John Murphy and David Horwich help business owners think like business buyers. Here's some of the common things that they see out there.
We tend to find many of the same things. We look at management. We look at the financial foundation. How good are the numbers, both historically and in the future? We look at the growth. What we often find is business owners spend too much money on growth. They plant a lot of seeds, and they plant too many seeds because they don't take enough time sometimes up front to determine what are the criteria they should use to judge the seeds, so they kind of plant a lot.
Another common theme that's been running through a lot of our clients over the last year or so has been sales operations and sales strategy and sales operations and development. A lot of companies that we've been working with, they're stalled out in growth and they're not sure why. And what we have found in taking a good hard look at them is that they don't have a great sales strategy in place. So we help them assess that, put that in place, and then get it going.
Today's topic is about cost reduction, specifically LED lighting. Here's Chaz Dykes.
LED lights are something in the neighborhood of
70% more efficient. So it's a substantial, very significant savings. Whenever I explain our program of cost reduction through LED retrofit, people say, oh yeah, that's exactly like what they're doing with the solar panels. And I'll tell you what, it's really very, very different than that. What people fail to understand is that if you go with the solar projects for your house and you have the panels put on, you don't own those panels. The company owns those panels, and you're just leasing them.
Oh. That,
the company goes in and goes to the feds and to the local government and gets
credits.
All of those credits and all those rebates. They do. Under with my program, you own the lights, you get all of that savings in addition to the reduced cost.
Okay, so you're ready to start your exit plan. We asked for three quick tips from Stacy McKibben.
Get your number. What is it that you're retiring to or that you're working towards? Understand what that is. That'll help your team to be able to help you to work backwards from that. So know that number and be prepared. Two is look around at your team. Core values of a company are exuded and exemplified by their team. More often than not, the challenges that I see in profitability are due to the fact of lack of productivity by the team. Lastly is run your business like you drive your car. You look at your car with a dashboard, you would get in a car and you would make sure that you had enough gas, that there was no check engine light on. All of those same things apply in your business. Do you have a clear dashboard? Do you understand how to read it? You don't need to be an accountant, but you do need to understand what the numbers are, and that is the health radiant of a business.
You're listening to one of many shows on ExitCoachRadio.com. We're interviewing advisors, authors, and thought leaders for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. If you'd like to be a guest on any of our shows, go to guest.ExitCoachRadio.com. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me today. Always a pleasure to have you with me. My next guest has been an entrepreneur for 25 years, has built multiple successful businesses in the UK, Germany, Poland, and the United States. And Matthew now sits on the board as director of three companies. So Matthew Janicek is a co-founder of Escape Fitness, which he's taken from a startup with minimal capital to a major international business chosen by premier fitness brands around the world, with growth across all markets, including North America. And he knows what it's like to build and start a business with hands-on experience in multiple startups, overcoming the challenge of financing the business and raising capital, innovating, reinventing the offering to remain relevant, and expanding into international markets. So Matthew is a serial learner, always listening to what successful people have done, and we look forward to listening to what he has to say. Matthew, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me, and thanks for that impressive introduction. I'm impressed with myself.
Well, I don't have many people that say they've started businesses in Poland on this show, so you're in good shape. There. Tell us a little bit more about you and your background.
Yeah, I'm a very, very sort of ordinary person. Wasn't very good or very talented at school. I didn't like people telling me what to do, and so I sort of left as soon as I can, trying to, really trying to find my way in the world. And the two things that I did know is I wanted to work. I did that when I was a kid in my school holidays, and that work for sort of family members. And so that was one of the things I knew I wanted to do. And then the second thing is I really had this passion for fitness. And my father, who was also working for a business most of my growing up, when when I got to about my mid-20s, he was sort of thinking about doing something different in his career. And we just, you know, we said, look, let's look at creating something for the family, a family business. And we both agreed that we'd go away. And if we had any ideas, we'd connect and see, you know, if anything had legs. And you know, we came up with a very simple idea. And, you know, and that was it, really. You know, it was the, you know, no sort of sophisticated business plan, no big funding from investors or anything like that. We just, you know, we had a bit of an idea based on both of our passions and managed to turn it into a business.
What was your, a lot of businesses start with a what if statement. What was your what if statement with your dad at that point? What if we...
Yeah, well, he was a trained engineer, so he was good at making things and inventing and manufacturing. That was really his skill. Mm-hmm. And he had an idea that Poland at this, and we're going back quite a while now, you know, 25 plus years. And so at the time, Poland was a closed country, but he knew it was going to open up and become part of the European Union at the time. And so he had a view that Poland was going to be a great Central European manufacturing location that could compete with Asia. That was his idea. And he knew how to make things and set up factories. And mine was in, as I said, was in the fitness space. And we, you know, I used to work out as a kid. The gym I went to had an area where the serious weightlifters would work out, and these were the guys that did the competitions and professional weightlifting, and they always had these really, really nice rubber weights, and I always was very envious. If I ever got into the gym, I'd go in and try and use them when they weren't there. And then the bodybuilders like myself had these kind of, you know, battered cast iron ones, and so the idea was to say, well, look, you know, if we could make these weight plates, these rubber ones, at an affordable price, then I think it's something that a lot of the gyms that I know and work in would want. And so that was it. I said that to my father. There was a long journey of trying to find a product and a factory. And we went through a number of ups and downs for a few years, but we started the company with a rubber dumbbell and a rubber weight plate. And that was it, really. That was the beginning.
Interesting. So the combination of your dad, who knew how to make things, and you just kind of with your eyes open as to what you saw was an opportunity, came together and built that. And since then, have you used that? It looks like you've started many companies in the fitness space especially. Has that been kind of how you've built upon that for future opportunities?
Yeah, I guess I think we have. And you know, sometimes you kind of forget where you started and you – as we've grown, as everybody does, you know, you get the danger of going into other directions and trying things that probably, you know, we've had a lot of failures, probably way more failures than we've had successes. And I think when your business starts to develop, a lot of people start to come to you and give you opportunities to sell products or to distribute products or to go into new markets. And if you've never really had a lot of success in your life, it's very tempted. It's like going to a bar and suddenly all the girls are standing around you and you've got your attention and you kind of don't know, you know, it's like, well, who do I talk to first kind of thing. And obviously, you know where that goes if you talk to too many of them. So you got to narrow down and focus. And I think when we started the company, I'd identified an opportunity that I'd been aware of for years. And so I kind of knew the gap in that market. And my dad, you know, sticking to your core competencies or your core strengths, my dad was an engineer, so he knew how to make this. And I think combining a good understanding of a market with capabilities that you've either got or you can bring together is probably the thing that's been consistent in the areas where we've been successful. And it's been the areas that have brought us down where we've not been successful, because the areas we've not been successful is when we've gone outside of our expertise, gone into markets that we didn't fully understand and probably required skills that weren't within our core competency, that was very difficult to sort of be, you know, the best in class, because we just didn't really have those skills like, you know, other people had.
And I think that's a very valuable lesson for our listeners too, is that if you really need kind of the mastermind of people thinking about concepts and ideas, because the world is full of those untethered balloons that are just floating around in space, right? They were great ideas, but they nobody tethered them down, and so they got away and didn't really work out. So, and now you've been doing a podcast called Escape Your Limits podcast to bring others the opportunity to learn from your experiences and those of your guests that you talk to who are entrepreneurs. How does that tell us about some of your latest episodes and what you tend to talk about?
Yeah, thank you. I started this really because when I went into business, I lived in this small town sort of north of London in the farming community, and there wasn't anything around. There wasn't necessarily many people to inspire me. There wasn't a lot of businesses. Most people work for farming and big factories. So there wasn't a lot of entrepreneurial people that you could learn off. And so, what I managed to do as I developed my business is I was traveling a lot. I was fortunate to meet a lot of very successful people within the health and wellness and fitness space. And I used to sit down and we'd have lunches and dinners and meetings. I always used to think, well, there's some great information here. I wish some of the people from my team were in this room because they would learn so much from these people. And that was really the idea. I was just getting all this information that I just wasn't sharing. And I was investing a lot of time. I traveled to different countries around the world and that was expensive both from time and from a monetary perspective. So it was like, okay, well, if I can sit down with these people, record it, and then distribute it to the people who work for us, our customers and everyone else, then, it can educate, inspire, and hopefully sort of bring everybody up at the same time. And obviously, there was a strong link to the values within our business as well. And so that was really the reason we started it. And I guess for me, I get hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of coaching every month now, speaking to some fantastic people that are at the top of their game.
Yeah, it's an amazing field in that things like COVID have created brand new opportunities to bring fitness to home using technology. There's so many things going on in the fitness space right now. What are some of the biggest trends that you see and opportunities for people that are entrepreneurial?
Well, one of the things that most, and I'm generalizing, but in most cases, one of the things that people think when they're starting the business is, it's like sales and marketing and finance and finding new customers and developing relationships and developing products, and most people, I'm sure this resonates because I've been there and I've got many friends, is, for the first few years, it's 24/7. You don't get a lot of time with your partner, your children, and your kind of relationships suffer and your health suffers. And a lot of people I know, quite quickly, people generally start business in a lot of cases a little bit older in life. And so they start getting a little bit out of shape and there's a lot of stress, and it becomes this vicious cycle. So, the more stress, the more weight they get. And then when you come into your business and you're meant to be this sort of elite athlete that's making decisions and inspiring people and having all this energy, you become totally the opposite. And so one of the things I found, and I think, if anybody takes anything away from this this interview, it's like put your health and wellness first, because if you do that, everything else will fall into place. And if you look at an elite athlete, whether they're for the NFL, NBA, or whatever, these guys are on, they're playing just for a few hours in a season. They're not on there very often. But if you look at what they do off the court or off the pitch, their diet, their recovery is really important. Their training, everything comes together for those few hours of performance. Now, when we're entrepreneurs, we're performing 24/7. So we've not just got to be ready for a few hours for a game. We've got to be ready all the time, for when that phone call comes at the end, at the end of the day and something's gone wrong and you need to fix it, or whether you've got an issue with your key employee, you've got to have so many things going on. And so all I would say is, think about getting, you know, whether you go and get an expert or get some advice or do it yourself, but put fitness before your business. And if you do that, you'll find everything else starts to figure itself out. And for people who say, well, I haven't got time, I'm too busy, then, you know, at some point your body is going to dictate how much time you've got, and it will shut you down, and then you're screwed, and it's too late to do anything about it. And so if you invest that time, and it doesn't take a lot, a few hours a week, you'll find that you'll be able to perform a lot longer. You'll make better decisions. You'll be a better leader, entrepreneur, husband, wife, father, and you'll find that your life starts looking a lot different.
What would you say, like, for the person who's listening to that and saying, you know, that's a great idea, I'm going to start tomorrow, where should they start? What would you say would be a first step towards wellness and getting their health back on track?
Well, one of the things, you know, in your business, when you, you know, if you think about the health of your business, one of the most important things is your finances. You know, you get a good finance person, depending on the level you are, you get a good finance person, and you create these habits, whereas, you know, every Monday or every day, you know, you're going to look at your numbers, and at the end of your month, you're going to do a monthly P&L, and you're going to do a yearly budget. And most people kind of make that a habit. You know, it's the lifeblood of your business. If you're not looking at your finances, you're screwed. So, you know, those are habits that you've got to put in place, and you've got to meet together on a regular basis to do it. And most companies, when they get to a size, that's just what happens in every company. When you're just starting, you're figuring it out. But if you're successful over a period of time, that happens. And your personal health is exactly the same. You've got to create a habit, and it's got to be part of your lifestyle. It's not something that you do for a little while to get in shape. It's something that you're going to do every day or every week for the rest of your life. And so what I would say is, you know, break it down. Start very, very simple. You know, start on a very, very, very simple level, and just make a commitment that you're gonna have a regular time, you know, every week where you're just gonna do something. And it could just be initially going out for a walk for an hour and listening to podcasts like this, and just, you know, having some time where you're getting your body moving and you're getting blood flowing, and you know, you're in a good place. That's what I'd start. And then, you know, once you've got that habit, then depending on, you know, I'm generalizing to a lot of people, but then, you know, try and do some strength training is really important, particularly for guys. Like, this is for over 50s. When you get to about 30, your muscle mass starts to decrease, and the more it starts to decrease, the more fat you're going to put on, because you're not burning it like you did when you was younger. So you really need to be maintaining your muscle mass. It's very, very important for men in particular as you get older. So try and incorporate some sort of strength training into your week. And then, you know, look at your nutrition. And I would suggest, again, you know, investing a little bit of money, go and find someone that can point you in the right direction, get you started. You know, there's plenty of people out there and trainers that can give you a, you know, meal plan and a workout plan and get some weights at home. But so you can buy that knowledge. But what you've got to do yourself that you can't pay anyone to do is you need to carve out that time and have the discipline to say, I'm going to do this no matter what happens in my life. I'm going to do this 3 times a week. And once you've got that, once you've got your shoes on and your shorts and you're out there, the workout will happen. And, you know, I don't think you want to put too much pressure on what you do in that workout. The main thing is that you do something, you get your shoes on, you're not in the office, and you're doing some form of movement and exercise. And then I think once you've got that habit, you know, baked in, then the rest of it will start, you know, it will start to sort of build up, and you'll gain momentum, and you'll be going in the right direction. But just start very simple. Just say 3 times a week, I'm going to do something for an hour. I'm going to move. I'm going to get a little bit sweaty. And I'm going to look at, get, you know, get some advice in terms of my diet, because your diet as well. You know, most people get to the afternoons and they crash. They're drinking loads of coffee. They're not thinking. And when you're stressed, you know, the hormones in your body, they'll cause you to hold weight. Stress itself is something that will cause you to build up fat in your body, and it will also prevent you from thinking clearly. And it will reduce your energy. So, you know, one of the most important things for a business leader is you need energy. And you need to be able to think clearly and make good decisions. You know, if you don't have those two things, you're not going to be a lot of use to anyone. And being healthy and having a good diet will help make you a much better entrepreneur.
Very good tips. And I noticed that in your background, you've done quite a bit in the Tony Robbins Mastery University and worked with neurolinguistics and other mental sides of the game as well. How do those fit in? What would you suggest on the mental side of things, besides, of course, listening to your podcast as you walk? That's a good first step right there. That's just getting positive. How do you suggest people stay positive through very difficult times like these?
Yeah, it is very difficult, and the good thing about exercise is it improves your mood. You know, within your muscles are an organ, and when you actually exert stress on a muscle, it releases these happy hormones into your body. So one of the things that you'll find is if you are under a lot of stress and life looks bad, just exercising and moving those muscles, at the end of it, you're going to be in a different mindset straight away. And you know, you can look into this. This is relatively new science, but that's a fact. You know, working out is going to make you happier. It will reduce stress, and you'll have a much better view on life and on your business if you do that. So that's the first thing. The second thing that's really good and I like to do is it's almost like, well, I haven't got too much time to, you know, study and then work out and everything. So I do the two together. So I say, right, I've got 45 minutes. There's this really good podcast that I've seen, or there's this audio book or whatever. And I'll plug that into my earphones when I go for a run and I do a workout. So I'm actually listening and learning. You know, I'm thinking about new ideas, you know, and I'm moving my body. And when you start getting your blood flow and you oxygenate your brain, you do actually come up with some really good ideas and solutions that you're not coming up with when you're in the office. Because stress, you know, you're in the fight or flight mode. And when you're stressed, even artificial stress that's created by emails and problems at work, you narrow your focus because, you know, your body thinks it's trying to, you know, there's danger, it's escaping from a wild animal or whatever. So it narrows down the way that it thinks and it's just survival, where you don't want to be in that frame of mind. You want to be, you know, open to opportunities, and you've got to put your body into a different, you know, chemically and mental state. And that's from being calm, and exercise will help you to do that. It will help you to look and solve problems in a much better way. So yeah, to answer your question, I would, you know, there's a ton of this class out there, and I would just sort of use that workout time to feed your brain at the same time.
That's an excellent idea. A lot of our listeners, of course, like everybody, are a little limited on time, and with the advent of different types of audio information out there, they can certainly find something that they like to feed their mind and while they're exercising their body. And like you said, one feeds the other. So it's a great idea. So how often does your podcast publish? Where should our listeners go to listen?
Yeah, so we put it out every single Monday, every week. You can it's called Escape Your Limits, and you can, you know, we post out little clips on my personal LinkedIn page. So if you want more information, you can go to Matthew Janizek on LinkedIn. There's the Escape Fitness website where we have a bunch of stuff on there. Or you can go to iTunes, or we've got Escape Fitness YouTube channel. We do an audio and a video version there. So if you just put in Escape Your Limits podcast, there's a ton of stuff that will come up on Google. And then if you want any more, you know, if anybody, any of your listeners wants any more information or pointing in the right direction, you can contact us on the website, and we can, you know, we can hook you up with places to go and resources to look at and people that, you know, could probably help people just get started if that's what they're struggling with.
I really appreciate you coming on. You know, your work is vitally important to everyone out there, and I think it's very important for our listeners to hear this message every so often. It's like, don't forget that your health and wellness are key to everything. Whether you're planning for the next 5 years or the next 50 years, you've got to get on a path of taking care of yourself. And of course, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot to it, but like you said, establishing habits, getting out and just do it, to paraphrase a large company out there, I guess. Just get it done, Matthew. Hey, thank you so much for joining us, and I wish you the best of luck with your podcast and with your efforts. And I hope you'll come back and join me again sometime, and we can go a little deeper on some of these topics.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
And thank you for listening today, and we'll be back with you very shortly with another podcast here on Exit Coach Radio.
Hey, everybody, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.